let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Hello and welcome back to Tech Talk, let's talk about and the Tech Talk series. I'm Jason. I am back. I was away for a week, and I'm ready to hit the ground running with a new episode. And this one, it brings together a bunch of pieces that I've been talking about here on Tech Talk. Most the focus has been on climate technology, as we talked about Climeworks with their carbon recapture technology, the blue carbon recapture technology from Captura. We talked about seaweed blooms. We talked about phase shifting materials. We talked about CO2 rail and how we can add carbon recapture technology to pre-existing shipping, and then energy storage through sand batteries. And I've talked a lot about, and I've mentioned a few times, this concept of net zero emissions. And it is really a topic that I think deserved its own video. I mentioned a little bit about what it means in brief before, but realistically, we should probably talk about what net zero actually means, and what it means to be not only net zero carbon, but to be carbon negative. So that's something that is really, you're going to be seeing a lot, and you probably are already seeing quite often in commercials, in press releases, in the newspaper, really anywhere companies and organizations and governments are able to talk about something like this. It's been used a lot recently as kind of a PR move, a calling card, or a call to action, more accurately, for different companies and organizations, for them to set targets and show that they are trying to change. One of the hopes from instituting a carbon tax was that it would push companies and give them a financial incentive to go green. It would give them a financial incentive in the way of a tax break if they were to switch to more green materials, or to purchase carbon offsets, or really just offset their carbon footprint in a bunch of different ways. And a way that a lot of companies are doing that is by setting net zero targets and improving or making their processes more efficient, lowering emissions, and investing in carbon recapture technology. One of the ones that I see quite often, aside from, I think, Maple Leaf Foods, it's been so long since I've watched TV, I can't even remember where I saw it, but They had an advertisement. Oh, it was, weirdly enough, is when I was watching The Bachelorette a few weeks ago. They are moving towards, they are the first carbon, net zero carbon meat company in Canada. They produce meat, which can be quite carbon intensive, at zero carbon. A little interesting point here. The argument that, I guess, that like non-dairy meat, like meat alternatives, produce less emissions than farming of cattle and livestock, but that it produces less carbon is in a lot of cases a lie. Stuff like almonds, cashew nuts, soy, almonds require oats, require a lot of carbon in order to plant and harvest, and then turn those material, turn those foodstuffs into meat and plant-based meat, like Impossible meat products or Beyond meat products. And you need quite much more of it. Like you need, a singular cow can churn out tons and tons of, you know, liters of milk in their lifetime, but you need acres and acres of, you know, almond farms and oat farms and soy farms in order to make up that same amount. So really, when it, in the wash, it kind of comes out about even. Sorry to spoil that for a lot of people. I know there are companies that, companies and producers who are able to do it at a lower emissions. And obviously there are traditional production companies that, like dairy companies and meat processing companies, who emit a lot of emissions, specifically the United States with factory farming, which is an absolutely disgusting process. But that's not what we're talking about today. But really, one of the interesting places where I have seen net zero targets most recently is in Formula One. Formula One is a circus. Basically, the circus of Formula One comes to town multiple weekends a year, goes to different locations around the world, and you are moving not just people. You are moving cars. You are moving tires. You are moving equipment. You are moving basically all of the equipment that's in a garage for a Formula One team. And each Formula One team, there are 10 of them, each has two garages that they run every race weekend, which has a full complement of staff, has full equipment, has a car that goes in it, has tires that go in it, has spare parts that go in it, has driver accommodations. There is the team area in the back of that, where you have these mobile homes that are set up. They're not really mobile homes. They're just buildings that can be torn down and put up very quickly. But are the size, like they are the size of like multiple houses. They are huge because they hold conference centers and meeting rooms and offices and, you know, driver accommodations. So it is a circus that moves from place to place. Things need to be shipped. Things need to be flown. People need to travel. This is not even accounting, you know, the material costs of building the cars and running the cars with all of the gasoline that was required. One of the steps that Formula One has taken recently is to start using more and more biofuel. So they are eventually, by 2030, 2026 is when the new engine regulations are supposed to come in, which is to move to a 100% synthetic biofuel, which is meant to replace the gasoline that is used in cars currently. Currently, there's a certain percentage. I'm not sure of what the percentage is, but the newest regulations mean, or engine regulations and car regulations mean, that a certain percentage of the fuel in Formula One cars is biofuel, which is a cleaner version, cleaner burning, cleaner produced version of fuel. But Formula One has set a net zero target by 2030. So with purchasing carbon offsets and running the teams more efficiently, reducing the amount of parts that teams can use, and centralizing or generalizing some of the parts, so teams have to produce less things. It, all teams get the same part for their car that is produced a certain number of times for each of those teams, and not each team having to iterate and build multiple versions of a very small piece of equipment or a very small part of a car as they iterate and design their vehicle. It's just, this is what it's going to be. We're going to give it to you. So it's ways like that where they are trying to reduce the amount of emissions that are produced by Formula One until it gets to a point in 2030. They have set a target where they will not produce more carbon than they than is taken away. So how does this actually function? I've got a couple other interesting examples. One of which is the government of Canada, which has a net zero emissions target, which is actually further off than a lot of companies. A lot of companies are setting 2030 as their date, and the Canadian government is looking even further down the road for very, very specific Alberta-specific reasons. But when we're talking about net zero, we very have to think very simply about this. Net zero essentially means that you are producing less carbon through your day-to-day life or day-to-day operations. You're producing at least an equal amount of carbon to what is removed from the environment by various carbon sinks. Now, we need to understand exactly what a carbon sink is. And I mentioned carbon sinks a few times on the show when talking about some of this new technology in this Tech Talk series. So specifically, and this comes from Client Earth, which is, I'll leave it in the show notes. A carbon sink is anything that absorbs more carbon from the atmosphere than it releases. For example, plants, the ocean, and soil. In contrast, a carbon source is anything that releases more carbon into the atmosphere than it absorbs. For example, the burning of fossil fuels or volcanic eruptions. So yes, carbon, the production of carbon is part of natural processes. We as human beings evolved to intake oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide being one part carbon, two parts oxygen, and the oxygen we breathe in is O2. Not O3, it's O2. So we intake oxygen and it pairs with a carbon and is expelled from our body when we breathe out. So when we think about carbon sinks, we need to think about what exactly those are in our everyday world. And thankfully, here in Canada, our country physically is a very large carbon sink for two reasons. One, we have massive, massive forests. We have a lot of national forests, a lot of provincial forests that are protected, and they are huge. I was in the White Channel last week and looking out over a beautiful, basically looking over a cliff, and there's a beautiful expanse of trees that goes off into the distance, and you can see nothing but these, like, 20-foot tall monoliths of bark and leaves and pine. And forests are carbon sinks because the actual functioning of a plant through photosynthesis and the existence of a plant intakes carbon. Plants, if you remember your elementary school biology, plants breathe in carbon dioxide and breathe out oxygen. They do this because they breathe in the carbon dioxide, and they separate out and they consume the carbon from the carbon dioxide and push out the oxygen. They need the carbon in order to, grow and eat and sustain themselves, and they expel the oxygen back into the environment. So in Canada, we have very large forests that are a carbon sink. And we also have a lot of rivers and waterways, a lot of rivers, lakes, ponds, bogs, marshes, all over the place. And we have two pretty large oceans on either side of us. And water, as we explained in the capture episode, actually stores quite a lot of carbon. The carbon that goes from that is in the atmosphere is transferred into the ocean water, because ocean water is H2O, contains oxygen, and it also contains other, you know, it contains plants that draw in carbon. It contains creatures that breathe out carbon. So there is carbon stored within the oceans. The technology like Captura goes out and siphons out and stores. And once you take the carbon out of the ocean, more carbon comes from the atmosphere and goes into the ocean. And it is stored there and held there. Right now, it's not that great because that leads to the eventual warming of ocean water, which leads to the changing of climate and changing of weather patterns, more storms, disrupted weather patterns, things like that, that are not very good for human beings and human civilization. But here in Canada, we have massive, massive carbon sinks. But we don't have the biggest. One of the biggest, and one of the ones that is constantly under threat and very recently has been under threat, is the Amazon rainforest. The Amazon rainforest is the biggest, is one of the biggest and one of the oldest forests in the world. It is a massive jungle of very old, very large, very, you know, carbon intensive plant life. Is a massive forest that basically is the lungs of the world, taking in gigatons of carbon every single year. And with the recently the wildfires, but beyond that, I will try and be as diplomatic as possible. The absolute destruction and mangling of our natural world that the Bolsonaro government in Brazil has done, has put that, you know, those lungs of the world under threat. And once those trees are gone and that jungle is gone, it is impossible or nigh impossible for us to restore what was once there. And we lose a carbon capture capability that the world has naturally. Because if you think about it, without human interference, anthropogenic climate change is the issue here. The climate does change over millennia. We've had ice ages before. We have had, you know, massive storms. We have had crazy weather systems before. We have had wild swings in climate before. But they happen on the order of centuries or millennia, these broad sweeping changes, so much that in the history of humanity, it's been barely imperceptible. Or barely perceptible. And most of those changes have happened without us noticing, and in times where humanity didn't really exist. We were around for the Ice Age a little bit, but for the most part, recorded human history has lived in a post-Ice Age world and has continued into the age of anthropogenic climate change. It's climate change that is caused by human interference. It's caused by our post-industrial, our industrial and post-industrial production capabilities, our burning of fossil fuels and things like that, and destruction of forests and marshes and wetlands and natural environments all over the globe. So if you think about it, the planet has evolved and grown in a way that has facilitated carbon sinks and carbon carbon sources. So as I mentioned, along with, you know, factories and the burning of fossil fuels, you have volcanic eruptions. You have these ways in which massive amounts of carbon, like fires, forest fires, are a naturally occurring entity in the natural world. They're meant to revitalize. They're just part of the natural cycle of nature to revitalize forest and plant life. The planet has evolved and grown a number of carbon sinks naturally and come into a level of equilibrium where the carbon sinks and the carbon sources have existed for millions of years in harmony with one another. When there's been more carbon in the atmosphere, there has been greater plant growth, you know, because there's more carbon, there's more for carbon for plants to consume. So the plants get bigger. And the plants get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until they are consuming too much carbon, and then they start to slowly kind of die off, and then the carbon goes back up because it's been going down while the plants have been growing, and it's kind of this fluctuation over and over and over again. And then there's other, you know, other things that are injected into that that cycle that tweak things every once in a while. But on the order of millennia, our planet has evolved and grown in order to have this cyclical nature. And the natural world that we have been destroying and throwing into disarray really is the thing that, to a great extent, has been keeping the climate stable, in the stable cycle for so long. And here comes humanity tearing down forests and getting rid of marshlands and getting rid of natural waterways, gumming up oceans, destroying reefs, and then building factories and burning fossil fuels to fire tons and tons of carbon, so much so that the planet can't adapt in time. If you think about it, the planet adapts and evolution works on a generational level. It takes generations for flora and fauna on Earth to evolve, to exist in particular conditions. And we are forcing nature to try and evolve or try and survive in an environment where we are creating so much pollution and injecting so much carbon and causing so much destruction that it really can't anymore. I talked a couple years back or now about the destabilization of polar vortexes. The polar vortexes are just a naturally occurring phenomena on planet Earth. And because of anthropogenic climate change, those polar vortexes have been disrupted and have come, crossed over the planet in waves and caused really horribly cold temperatures in places that have never had that cold temperature before. Think about the snowstorms and the ice storms in Texas a couple years back. We were having here in Manitoba like minus 40, minus 50 temperatures, and we got through it. It wasn't great. It wasn't easy, and a lot of people suffered quite a lot because of it, and it did a lot of damage, but we have, as a consequence of how our buildings are built, how our vehicles are tested, how our vehicles are run, how we have ourselves over years gotten used to the cold and gotten used to the weather, how our power lines are set up, how our internet lines are laid, have set up and evolved in a way that responds to wild fluctuations in temperature. In Texas, they haven't. So when that happened, they were impacted significantly. Now think about that for the planet. Think about that for trees. Think about that for forests. Think about that for animals. We are seeing, polar bears having to move further and further south where they're crossbreeding with grizzly bears. And you're getting things called growler bears or pizzly bears, which are hybrids of polar bears and grizzly bears, because polar bears have nothing to eat because climate change has disrupted their natural habitat. So they are moving and they are being forced to change and evolve, and we are losing species. This is all to say that the carbon sinks that already exist on planet Earth are not enough, because we are, on one hand, not letting them grow fast enough, because we are controlling in a lot of ways the spread of indigenous flora and fauna on planet Earth. The grass that is probably outside of your house or your apartment right now is not naturally occurring, and it is actually a non-indigenous grass species, weirdly enough. That's not prairie grass right out front of your house right now. So on the one hand, we are not allowing the carbon sinks to grow naturally. On the other hand, we are destroying carbon sinks by cutting down forests and destroying natural seaweed blooms and coral reefs and diverting waterways, things like that. And on the third, we are just overwhelming them with the amount of emissions we are putting into the environment. So how does this roll back to net zero? Well, net zero is the hope that we can, with the carbon recapture that is there, by creating carbon sinks, like planting new forests, or, you know, starting climate recapture facilities like Captura has, like Climeworks has, we can start to bring more emissions. We can recapture more carbon, expand the ability of the planet to act as a carbon sink, and then reduce reduce the burden of carbon sources by reducing the need for travel and production, or traveling in more green ways. So what net zero is we're trying to bring those two into balance. For Formula One, it's having biofuels and controlling the parts, and, you know, having more efficient travel options for teams, while also, you know, supporting initiatives to start, you know, rebuild forests and build climate recapture facilities. There's a number of Sebastian Vettel, who's retiring at the end of the year, has been a major investor in climate recapture facilities in Iceland, and I believe he's starting some in Germany, his home country. So what we're doing is trying to bring these back into balance, because before human beings and before the Industrial Revolution, they were in balance. The climate rose and fell and had its different cycles, and we were just along for the ride, because the carbon sinks and the carbon sources on Earth were in equilibrium with one another. But through anthropogenic climate change, we have shifted the scales. We have created more emissions than the planet can deal with naturally. And forests cannot grow fast enough. Plants can't grow fast enough in order to consume more carbon than that is in the atmosphere and in the oceans. So we are getting a lot more that is just sticking around and being, you know, sitting in the atmosphere and not going anywhere, because carbon dioxide has a very long half-life. So what we're trying to do in net zero is bring those into equilibrium, and the hope is one day start to go in the negative direction, so become carbon negative, where we are capturing and absorbing more carbon than is being released into the atmosphere or being released into the world. So if you want to read more about it, I'm going to put the net zero emissions by 2050 target from the Canadian government in there. Canada's trying to get to net zero by 2050. This actually became Canadian law. It is now law. This target is law. It's part of the Canadian Net Zero Emissions Accountability Act, which became law on June 29th, 2021. I'm also going to include, interestingly, Shell, a gasoline company, their carbon initiatives, and I'll also include the Formula One Net Zero by 2030 carbon initiative target in the show notes if you want to read a little bit more. And I'm going to leave some information about carbon sinks there as well. But hopefully, with all the technology we've been talking about on the show, we are hoping that one day we will have more options and more capabilities to be a carbon sink for the world, and to really fight back against climate disaster and stop the worst from happening. All right, that'll do it for today. Thank you very, very much for listening. I've got about a minute left. I just want to say thank you very, very much for listening. It's been quite a wild ride. I am back. I'm going to try and polish off this Tech Talk series quite soon. I don't think it's going to be the last episode, but keep tuned for that. If you're tuned live into 101.5 UM FM, keep that dial on 101.5. You've got some great songs, some great shows coming up right after this one. If you're listening on Spotify, thank you very, very much for your download. Like, subscribe, share, do all that great stuff. Catch me this Thursday on The Hockey Show, 5:30, 5:36, 6:30 with Teebs. And as always, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe, everyone.